This is the Final Round Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now your host, Chris Marquardt.
Since he only has a half an hour.
Well, why didn't that come up? What's going on there? Good afternoon, good evening, welcome to another episode of the Final Round Podcast. Welcome to everybody that's tuning in. Episode number 18 on deck. Going to be a good one. We're talking with the folks from Racers for Rescues. We're going to be talking with them. John Pellicane, he came up with a win. He's going to be at the back end. We're going to talk a little bit about Dan Fletcher's 100th career NHRA win. Awesome accomplishment for him. And there's a little bit of musical chairs going on to accomplish that. And we'll dive into that a little bit later on. And also, coming away with some racing action was the one and only Jason Oldfield, who finally got a chance to get the Corvette out, made a couple of passes down in Pittsburgh. Wasn't too bad, though, right? It was virtually a win for everybody.
Well, it was, I guess we got out. It wasn't with the Corvette. It was with Phil Harndon's Camaro that we got out there again. But it wasn't terrible, I guess, considering the fact that I've only been out one time this year. We did some testing Friday night. We get down to Pittsburgh early enough. I was able to make some test passes. And Saturday wasn't terrible. Quite frankly, I didn't deserve to win first round. I got lucky and got past first round, but lost a real close competitive race second round on Saturday. But then Sunday, I was terrible. I was just...
You ran into your Achilles heel, your nemesis.
I did. Yeah, Vince Gregory, he definitely has my number. I don't know what it is. Vince had me on the tree, and we got out, ended up taking too much stripe at the end, and I broke out trying to catch him. So, but yeah, Vince definitely has my number. He's a tough competitor, there's no doubt about it. But Vince definitely has my number.
You had to run the Camaro, right? You didn't have any choice because you still don't have a trailer?
I do not have a trailer, that is correct. Yes. So, yeah, I don't have much choice in the say, but not that I don't like, I dislike running the Camaro. It makes it easier when you have a trailer to transport your vehicle to.
How was the facility and everything? You said it was pretty comparable to what you're accustomed to.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is a nice track. It's definitely very comparable, I would say, to Empire. Overall, the pits are decent, the track surface itself is nice. They only run 8th mile for the IHRA race, so that makes it so you have a real long shutdown. From that standpoint, it was a nice track. That was the first time I was ever there, and I really have no complaints. So they had some nice shirts too. I actually forgot to get one.
No.
I wish I would have. Phil ended up getting one, but yeah, I wish I would have gotten one because it was a cool looking shirt.
They selling them online any place?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't looked. I was going to look at some point in time. My guess is they probably do, but if not, I'll have Eric stop over there since he only lives like an hour at the track. It was Saturday morning as it was raining off and on. Eric says to me, he's like, "I'm going home. You need anything?" And it's like, "Aren't you worried about missing something?" He's like, "No, we're not getting on the track for a couple hours, and I only live an hour from here." So he ran home and I guess got some stuff, took a shower, and came back.
Well, the Eric that Jason references, Eric Maccioli from Racers for Rescues. This is an awesome organization that focuses on animal rescues and trying to keep animals from meeting untimely ends and finding forever homes. Eric, man, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more in detail about Racers for Rescues right off the top and where people can find out more about it.
Sure. We started in 2014. I was thinking to myself, I do a lot of driving and usually I'm by myself, and I figured, I could definitely volunteer to transport dogs. I've transported dogs before, never in a racing situation, but I've done dog transports before. And I just thought, hey, if a dog needs to get from, Virginia to Pennsylvania, I got plenty of room and I don't mind sharing a seat with a dog. So that's kind of how it started. It more branched into just collecting for small rescues in whatever area I happen to be racing. So if I was in, Richmond racing, I would collect for a local rescue in Richmond. And that's actually where it all started, was in Richmond. And we did really well. Our first time out, we collected close to, I think it was over 400 pounds of dog food and a bunch of other stuff. And I ended up collecting a dog the second year I was there. I got my dog Theo, from, the rescue that we were collecting from. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's nice to see, you know, people are very welcoming to it and don't have a hard time pulling out their pocketbook for a bag of dog food or something. And it's been a lot of fun. Doug Linden has been, and his wife Pam have been awesome. They've helped me through the whole thing. Jay can tell you, you know, that I travel with Doug wherever we race. You see, we live 3 hours apart, but pretty much any race one of us is at, the other one's at it too. So, you know, he's been a lot of help, and his wife Pam also. She's made, actually this past weekend, she made jewelry that we were selling, bracelets, and we raised a little over $400. For a local, the girl who rescued the dog that I'm currently fostering. So, yeah, it's been a good deal. We're on Facebook if anybody wants to check it out. Racers for Rescues on Facebook. I don't update it nearly as much as I should. I usually end up putting, if you go to my personal Facebook page, it looks like either dogs or cars. Dogs or cars, dogs or cars, dog, dog, car. That's pretty much what it is, so. But yeah, that's it in a nutshell, though.
The dog.
I really appreciate the time to explain it to you guys. So,
what kind of climate does Richmond have in terms of their rescues and things like that? To understate it, because every place is it overpopulated? Is it, as it would seem, it would be. Richmond's a pretty large city.
Pittsburgh, you mean?
Didn't you say it started in Richmond?
Oh. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I started the first time we collected was in Richmond. That was our maiden voyage, and actually we really killed it in Richmond. And I've been friends with a couple of young ladies out of Richmond, Jill Navery with Bragg. It's a bully breed rescue, which tends to be, for the most part, the most of, you know, the majority of the dogs that are found in pounds are pit bull or Staffordshire Terrier type dogs.
Right.
It's a very misunderstood breed, you know, and it can be a breed that, you know, you have to be a fairly dog savvy person to own. And unfortunately, you know, between the reputation that the dogs have, which, you know, for the most part is nonsense, but it's ended up where these dogs tend to be the ones that are in the shelter. So I've been dealing with Jill for 3 years now, and also Lisa Rosso. She has a Second Chance dog rescue in Richmond area, and she deals mainly with small dogs. At one point in Richmond, I had probably about, 15 dogs in my trailer all in crates for people to come look at, so... I find that if you go to a racetrack, chances are probably about every three or four trailers you're going to find somebody with a dog. Drag racers have big hearts. Everybody knows that. Jay can attest to that for sure, that, you know, drag racers are great people, and I figured, we'll tap into that a little bit and see what we can do for the dogs and cats. We've actually collected for some cat rescues too. One in Pittsburgh. One of the guys, the tech officials at Pittsburgh Raceway or Keystone now Raceway Park, Don Ickes. He and his wife have a cat rescue. They have like over 90 cats. They actually have their own. The cats have their own house. So on his property. So we collected for him also, but. Yeah, that's kind of the deal. So,
is Leia the dog that you have now? Leia?
Leia is the dog I have now. Yes.
Okay.
And she is the sweetest thing. I mean, if I'm sure Jason can show you pictures of her on on my Facebook page because it's full of it. She is a sweetheart. She originally came from a kill shelter in Georgia, and a guy near Pittsburgh here, I use the term adopted in a very loose way because he basically got her from Georgia up here to Pittsburgh, and she spent 2.5 years in his basement. And, you know, had no social skills, and, you know, just had very little attention given to her, very little attention from humans, anything. And she is the sweetest little girl. Every day I come home from work, I let my three dogs out, play with them a little bit, kiss my wife goodnight, and go downstairs in our family room and spend the night with Leia. Actually, the first 2 months she stayed, it's kind of a funny story. She was supposed to be at my house for one day because my wife wouldn't let Melissa, the rescue, take her back to the house that she was living at. So she was supposed to stay at my house for one night, and it ended up being 5 months. And then she went for training for 6 weeks and came back, and she's been with me now for about a month and a half again. But I'll go downstairs and just, you know, hang out with her, and she just, you know, just curls up in my lap and snuggles. She's just the sweetest thing. So, but she's looking for a home. If anybody out there is listening, is looking for a real sweet dog, she's a total sweetheart. So.
And would you deliver her? If we could find her a home, would you deliver her, Eric?
Would I deliver her?
Yes.
Yeah, I would drive her to California if I had to find her a good home. And I'm not even joking, I would. Anybody who's interested, I'll tell you a little more about her. She does have a prey drive, so if you're a cat person, this isn't the dog for you. I have three cats at my house, and, you know, we have to watch that. She's good with dogs that she can be socialized with, which are, you know, usually a passive type of dog of a good size. So, ideally, she would be best in a home by herself, you know, where she could get all the love and attention, which at this point in her life, I think she justly deserves. But yeah, I mean, you know, if anybody's interested, I would bring her anywhere. Obviously, we do a home check. Fence yard is kind of something that most rescues definitely would like to see, depending on the dog. I mean, if it's a smaller dog, but, you know, a lap dog or something, people aren't, it's not as crucial. But with a dog like Leia, she likes to get out and run. She'd be great for somebody who's into jogging or walking. She has this little stuffed dinosaur that, cute as heck. She just walks around with a stuffed dinosaur in her mouth when she goes on her walks, and just people like look out of cars and stuff and look at her, and there she is walking with a little stuffed dinosaur in her mouth. Anybody would be interested, they could definitely contact me through my Facebook page or through Racers for Rescue. Any questions or anything, I could definitely answer. So
what's one of the mistakes or the misconceptions about the breed? You said you're pretty active with a couple of the pit bull and Staffordshire Terrier rescue programs. Mm-hmm. What's one of the mistakes, or what's the most common mistake that people make when they evaluate the pit bull breed itself? Because I know I've got my own hang-ups on that breed personally. What might I be missing?
Sure. First of all, the first thing to know about a Staffordshire Terrier or a Pit Bull is they are some of the most loyal dogs you will ever encounter. These dogs, you know, they will grab onto a person. I mean, you know, not in that way, but in a good way.
Phrasing.
And that'll be, they will just, love you up and down. They just are such a loyal dog. They are a dog that needs to be stimulated. They need to have exercise. They need to have a lot of I'm not going to say a lot of attention, but they need to know that, you know, their human is there for them, and that they can kind count on their human to be a responsible owner and an owner that's going to spend time with them. A lot of times what ends up happening is, you know, people will get these dogs when they're puppies. They're some of the cutest puppies you've ever seen. I'm sure everybody's seen a little pit bull puppy, these little cute little pudgy pit bull puppies. And a lot of times people don't take the time to train the dogs properly. The dog has to know that you are the alpha, and that is something that I am probably the worst at. There's a pecking order in my house, and I can tell you right now, out of the seven animals and my wife that live in my house and then myself, I'm probably, you know, hanging out around seven or eight. you know, everybody else in my house probably is a little higher on the pecking order, you know, with my wife, of course, being number one. So, you know, a good regimented training and just a lot of stimulation for the dogs. They can be known for, you know, tearing up furniture and stuff like that when they get bored. That's very easily rectified. Just give them something to do. They want something to do. They're great with kids. Leia is great with kids. I have a friend of mine who's a dog trainer, and Mike comes by the house, and, you know, he's worked with Leia, and he's introduced Leia to his children. He's got a three-year-old son and probably about an eight-month-old daughter. She's done wonderfully with them. The moral of the story is, I guess, probably what a lot of people say is, it's how you raise the dog. You know, the dog will be a good dog if you treat the dog with respect and you know, respect to the knowledge of how powerful a breed it really is also, you know. You know, unfortunately, there's people out there that, you know, want to have a dog like that because of some sort of other thing they're lacking in their life. That's what gives the dog the bad name. It really does. You know, it's like everything else. A few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. They're sweet dogs. They really are, for sure. Theo, my Staffordshire Terrier, we use him for training dogs that are aggressive dogs. And some of those that come over, believe it or not, are Cocker Spaniels, little dogs. I have a Pug Boston Terrier mix that makes a 90-pound pit bull look like a baby. He chases one of these dogs that we bring over for playtime in my yard. Bob will chase that dog all over my yard. Funniest thing to see, to watch a little black pug chasing a 90-pound pit bull around, but, you know.
I have to say,
this pit bull does not turn on a 90-pound, you know, or a 35-pound pug that he could eat. So,
right, yeah, it's the little dogs, Eric.
Yeah, they're great dogs, they really are.
I say it's the little dogs, Eric, that you got to watch out for. My little Bichon poo, it's like one of my daughter's girlfriends nicknamed him Bitey. He's the one you got to watch out for. It's like all the big dogs that I've had have all been great dogs. It's the little ones that are the nasty ones, or the ones that you turn around, you're not looking for a second, and next thing you know, you're getting bit, you know. Regarding Racers for Rescues, are you typically raising money for a rescue in the area where you're racing? Like, I know last weekend we were in Pittsburgh and you were, you know, raising money for one of the rescues that was there. This weekend you're going to be out in Maryland, right?
Yes.
And
this weekend, unfortunately, because it was so tight to Pittsburgh,
yep.
We really don't have much planned. Usually I would have tried to get one of those girls from the rescue out of Richmond to come and meet me in Maryland, because the proximity is not too bad. It's not that bad a drive.
Right.
So So usually I would try and work something out with one of those two rescues. But since, you know, we're right on top of, you know, it's not even a week ago I was at Pittsburgh making my donation. And now, you know, I'm on my way down to Maryland. Actually, I'm probably the only person who's ever talked to you guys on your show from a Moose Lodge parking lot where I'm about to shoot pool at 7:30 and then get on the road and drive to Maryland to go racing. So this week we're kind of going to do it kind of casual. If people want to donate things, that's great. I'll just bring it back for Melissa Marie and her rescue here in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Then we're going to probably hit that, hit one of the races up in, one of the 990 races up in at Empire. We usually, collect for Buddy's Second Chance up in Kenmore, New York.
Yeah.
They actually have, Ray Geary. I know, Jay, you know Ray. He
yep.
adopted his dog from them. We usually collect for them. And, in New York, we always do quite well because everybody knows everybody in New York's got a good heart. So we usually do very well in New York. So I'm looking forward to doing that too. So
yeah, we just put the first two races officially up on the Western New York Super Rod Association page, July 29th and July 30th. July 29th race actually is the banner day at the races, and my understanding is that we're going to have...
is it the banner day? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, my understanding is we're probably going to have 100
odd
people.
Well, I'll definitely have to plan something for that then.
Yeah, we'll have to try...
We'll shake down your coworkers a little bit.
Right, yeah, I was just going to say, I'll have to try and see if I can spread the word a little bit and get some of our guests that are coming to bring a bag of dog food or a dog toy and... maybe we could, do a little side raffle or something like that. That hey, if you bring a bag of dog food, you could get entered for, a prize or something like that. Or maybe we'll give you something.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a great.
Yeah, we've done raffles before. We've raffled off stuff in the past, and that's always a good way to collect a couple of bucks for the animals. You know, it's tough. I'm always a little leery. I would rather take a bag of dog food than cash. And that's simply because of the fact that, I'm not a 501 C3, rescue.
Right.
I'm just a guy who collects dog food,
Right.
I've obviously taken money from people, people I know and stuff like that. But all it takes is one person to say, hey, are you using this to pay for your racing or something
right,
like that?
Right.
And you end up with a mess. They don't know that it literally cost me a couple grand a year to do this, but, I do that willingly. We usually like to try and collect food type items, unless we're doing like a raffle or something like that. With a raffle, you can pretty much do what you want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, like I said, we'll have to try and put something together July 29th. But, yeah, for anybody that's watching for this weekend that's going to be heading out to Bud's Creek, yeah, certainly bring a bag of dog food and go see Eric. And, yeah, the other thing, too, you touched on it real briefly. So Doug Linden's wife, Pam, this past weekend she made bracelets for the first time. Pam is very crafty for those that know her. She just started making jewelry, and this past weekend at Pittsburgh was the first time that she did it. And she made for anybody that has a wife or a teenage daughter, which I have both. you're going to be very familiar with Pandora bracelets, which are these, basically little bracelets with charms on them. And that's what Pam made, actually, was Pandora bracelets. And she made them with dog and cat theme charms on them.
That's cool.
And she donated all the materials all the time. 100% of the proceeds went to the Racers for Rescues. And like Eric said, we raised $400 or something like that at the track. So. If there's anybody that's going to be at Bud's Creek, that I will say that firsthand, I bought three bracelets for my wife and daughter. And so if you're going to be down there, certainly stop by Eric and Doug's trailers and take a look at some of the bracelets. They're real nice, and they're going. The money's going for a great cause as well. But if you're not into Pandora bracelets or you don't have someone to give them to, then bring yourself a dog toy or some dog food and hand it over to Eric while he's down there.
thanks, Jay. I appreciate the heads up. Yeah, it's always, like I said, it's always nice to get the word out. We were in Drag Review the first year we did it. Todd Silvey, when he was still involved with Drag Review, did an interview, and we were in that, and you know, that definitely got some exposure. And you know, now I'm pretty much known as the dog guy with the green car with the paws on it. that's kind of the mantra now. I'm you know, everybody who meets me, who, you know, I don't know through racing, they're like, are you the dog guy? I'm like, yeah, I'm the dog guy. So, but
it's a great cause. And I mean, you're not just, I mean, the thing that I think is important for everybody to know is that you're not just out there, you know, basically trying to collect dog food or money for the rescues, which would be nice enough as it is. But I mean, you actually foster dogs as well. I mean, I see it
and transport them. You said moves them from shelter home,
and
or
transports dogs. I mean, I see on Eric's Facebook page all the time where he is, you know, fostering. It's, I don't know how often it is, Eric, but it seems like as soon as you find a home for a dog, you're fostering another one. And that's a tough thing to do. I mean, there's not only do you have your own pets that you have in your house, but then, you know, you have the training aspect of it, and the uncertainty, and the care, the feeding, and all the rest of it that goes along with fostering a dog. So there, you know, you're putting your money where your mouth is too, Eric. So like I said, this is not just some guy that's you know, begging for money or dog food online.
We don't eat much dog food in my house. A little cat food every once in a while. Sometimes get tough, but no dog. it's an amazing feeling when you know, even if I share a post for a dog, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, you know, people are very unaware of really what happens with a lot of the animals, you know, unfortunately. And when you get involved in it, you really get to see kind of the, you know, I hasten to use the term seedy underbelly of it, but there is a seedy underbelly of it. I mean, there are people who just do not treat animals right. And, you know, I've often, I remember putting on Facebook one time, I said, if I ever contract a terminal disease, there's a lot of people who better watch out, you know, because, you know, I'm definitely going to be on the hunt for people who are abusing animals, you know.
Right, right.
But, you know, there's just a lot of dogs that have just had a really, and cats also, that have had a really, really tough time. And it's amazing to see just how resilient these poor animals are, how once they feel the love that, you know, a person will give them, how they just really, you know, just want to share that love back with a human being. And it's, you know, there's days I come out of work and it's like, it was kind of a crummy day at work, or, you know, oh boy, it's raining again, we won't be racing this weekend. And I come home and I see my dogs and it's just like, you know, it's awesome just to spend time with them and, you know, just to have them there for me to, you know, it's almost like they understand, Dad had a bad day, so we're gonna be extra special snuggly tonight, you know. And and I'm the kind of guy that likes to have, like, you know, three or four dogs draped on me while I'm watching a movie, you know.
you've posted pictures on Facebook, so yeah, if anybody doesn't believe that, just go to Eric's personal Facebook page and you'll see pictures of him covered in dogs. He's laying on the couch.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, you know, I promised I would get you out of here by 7:30 so that you could go play pool. I'm assuming that it's a league night tonight, right?
Yeah, I shoot in a league on Thursday nights, and they were kind of stuck this week. They knew I had to go race, but I'm going to meet Doug on the thruway in about an hour and a half. We meet at the same spot, like on the thruway, you know, and then we're going to try and get past the Beltway in Washington before, you know, before tonight's up, so we don't have to drive through that traffic. But yeah, again, I appreciate the chance to be on the show. I really appreciate it. And if anybody's interested in Leia, you know, if you can't get a hold of me, let Jay know. I'm sure he'll get a hold of me. You know, she's a total sweetheart, and she's going to make somebody a wonderful daughter. And I wish it could be me, but, you know, with the cats and three dogs of my own, I think I might be pushing the envelope with an extra one. So.
Well, awesome, man. I appreciate you making time to come on and keep us posted as to how things are going. We'll be on in 2 weeks, which is going to lead us right up close to that weekend that you guys were talking about.
Yeah, it's going
to
be Thursday before,
so,
yep.
So Thursday before, yep. Thursday after, you'll have to give us an update on how things went in terms of raising some materials for local shelters.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks a lot,
hey,
Eric.
Good luck this weekend.
Soon.
Yeah, thanks. We'll see
you. See ya.
There goes Eric Macchiaroli. Eric Macchiaroli. It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, yes. He's a good dude, though. I mean, he really does. He does a lot for those dogs. He's posting on Facebook constantly, and like I said, he's always trying to raise money, and he's pledged actually for our races that he will pay a $50 bonus essentially to any racer that wins if you bring a bag of dog food for one of our races. So, I mean, and that's just money out of his pocket, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's basically just saying, I'll donate this money to the shelter if people will bring dog food. So, yeah, hopefully our racers are listening and watching, and, you know, obviously Eric would accept donations anywhere you see him. So, it's one of those things where even my wife, she yells at me constantly that I actually just found a great deal on Amazon this past week. And she's like, why didn't you buy 10 of those things so we could give them to Eric for the rescue? And it's like, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, whether it's toys or food or whatever it might be, yeah, Eric would gladly take it and give it to one of the shelters. So hopefully he can get himself and now you can buy bracelets. And so hopefully he can raise himself some money.
What I didn't get a chance to ask him was, does he move it around? Like if he goes to Pittsburgh or if he goes to Richmond, there's got to be a number of shelters in the area. Does he work with one shelter specifically, or does he shuttle it around?
I think I did ask him that specifically, and I think you were adjusting the camera or something at the time. But overall, what he said, like this weekend, he would have contacted the Richmond Animal Shelter because mm-hmm. they're pretty close to Bud's Creek. Mm-hmm. But he just didn't have time because he was down in Pittsburgh last week. But yeah, in general, like when he's at Empire, there's the animal rescue. I can't remember the name of it. He mentioned it online, the small animal rescue that's out of Kenmore, New York. So for when he's racing at Lancaster or at Empire, a lot of times he'll take that money and donate it to the small animal rescue there out of Kenmore, New York.
Gotcha. So he's got the specific partners in the area.
Yeah, he's got some different partners that he works with. Yeah, exactly. Good deal. I don't know how far. I mean, I do know that he mentioned that, I think, was it Leia that he got out of the kill shelter in mm-hmm. Georgia,
yep.
So, I mean, I know he travels I guess I would say not all over the country, but he travels pretty significantly racing. So
Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast anyway.
Yeah. So it's very possible that he might have, you know, deals with shelters down in Georgia and Florida and stuff like that too. I don't know for sure.
Right.
All I know is that he definitely lives for racing and for animal rescue. It's 100% true. That's where his passions lie for sure. Yeah. He's a good dude and a tough racer too.
We have a shelter here close to us in Seneca Falls, which is the Beverly Animal Shelter, which I think that doubles as the Seneca County SPCA, if I'm not mistaken. And they're over on River Road, and that's where our dog came from. Mm-hmm. Our Lab Shepherd mix came from there. And my aunt, she got a dog from there, and they're a no-kill shelter, so they've always got a ton of animals. At one point, I think they had a llama.
Oh, really?
And I don't know what the story was, but if I remember right, at one point they had a llama over there. There's tons of cats and dogs that you can check out here locally. And then all the racetracks that we talk about, there's opportunities close to them. And if you want information, get a hold of Eric. He'll just steer you in the right direction. Shifting gears now to,
I would say, all the poor listeners and watchers that tuned in to listen for drag to racing, some drag racing stuff. If we had to make them pay by listening to Animal Rescue for the first half hour.
Should I play the show intro over again so they can get, acclimated back into drag racing mode? Dan Fletcher coming away with his milestone 100th career NHRA national event win. and you were throwing some stats at me and some interesting ways that it played out. It's basically the hardest event to get it at.
It's definitely one of them. There's no doubt about it.
It's the All-Star race in Chicago.
It's because the All-Star race is taking place in Chicago. So you have the baddest of the bad across the country that all converge on Chicago for the Jegs All-Star race. And, yeah, it doesn't matter what category, what sportsman category you're in. There's going to be basically the top eight guys in the country, you know, we could even say in the world potentially, in those categories that are going to be there. So that makes it a very, very tough race to win. You in Chicago, you've won a really hard race for sure. And yeah, and then from there, you know, obviously huge news for him to get his 100th. I know, you know, he's kind of had that monkey on his back, if you will, and he just wanted to get it over with. And so now he got that done and moved on with. But yeah, the funny thing is the fact that it came in Super Street, or which would be IHRA Hot Rod 1090, which he typically doesn't run. He's usually in Super Stock, and Stock is where he spends most of his time. He actually double entered. I believe he entered in Super Comp and in Super Street. I think he lost first round in Super Comp. And the dragster, and then he ended up taking the Nova that Timothy typically drives and runs locally in the TNT Super Series, took that out to Chicago and won Super Street with that car. And meanwhile, while he was doing that, his kids wanted to go racing. Thomas and Timothy wanted to race, so they took the two Camaros down to Pittsburgh, and Timothy won stock in the Camaro on Saturday, and Thomas won super stock in the other Camaro on Sunday. So, yeah, overall, switching things up worked out pretty well. The Fletcher clan had three big wins this weekend.
And that primary Camaro is one of the most decorated cars.
Yeah, the 69 Camaro that Thomas was driving in Superstock is the winningest car in NHRA history, basically because, you know, if you think about the pros, I mean, obviously John Force has more wins, but, you know, John Force gets a new car, you know, probably twice a year too.
Right.
But yeah, Dan Fletcher, you know, that car his dad bought originally brand new in 1969. It's been a race car its entire life, and Dan Fletcher's been driving it since his dad. Probably since before his dad passed away, but you know, I would say probably back mid-80s somewhere that Dan's been driving that car and racking up lots and lots of wins in that car. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and it's still going.
And still going, that's correct. There were some really interesting stats, too, that I saw. So this was Dan's 150th final round for his 100th win. So he has a 66% conversion rate there.
Right.
And in his 100th wins, he's beaten 90 different drivers.
Wow.
Which that really shocked me, because you think, all right, well, here's this guy getting 100 wins. Obviously, he's probably, you know, faced a bunch of guys, a bunch of the same guys a bunch of times. But yeah, 90 different drivers in for 100 different wins. That's
how many of those drivers do you think are still driving? Because, I mean, you think his career has lapsed some time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how many of those guys aren't even racing anymore? That are just final round losers.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's got to be a bunch of them. I thought I saw the stat and I didn't believe it, but maybe it's true. I thought the stat said that he won his first event in 1985, his first NHRA national event in 1985. I wouldn't have thought that it was that long ago. I would have guessed...
It's not that long ago.
Well, I mean, it's not that it's a huge deal. I would have guessed that it would have been more like 1990, somewhere around there. But, I mean, we're only talking, I guess, a five-year difference. And right. I was just having this discussion with somebody last week. It's like, you know, someone says something, it's like, oh, that was 20 years ago. I'm like, no, that wasn't 20 years ago. That was 1997. It's like, oh yeah, never mind. That's 20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, so the lines, the timeline really gets blurred there. So maybe it was 1985 when his first win was. But, I mean, I will say that he had his first win, and at that point in time, he really, let's even assume it's around that time. His first win, he really wasn't traveling like he is now. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until he decided to leave Xerox and race professionally full time, that's when he really started racking up the wins. And I don't know what wins number they were. I remember being out in the West Coast. I was out there for work, and at the time it was big news that Dan was going to make the Western swing. So we're actually coming up to the Western swing now. So what they do is they go through and they race Denver, Sonoma, and Seattle. The NHRA does those three races. That's the Western swing. And then they make their way back. They hit Brainerd in Minnesota on the way back. And then that whole trip kind of culminates at Indy on Labor Day weekend. So I had known that he was making the Western swing, and it was a big deal. People around here knew that Dan was going for the West Coast swing. And I happened to see him in Sonoma. I stayed there for the weekend and asked him how he did that the previous weekend in Denver. He's like, oh, I won. It's like, oh, okay, congratulations. That's great. So I stayed for Saturday, didn't stick around for Sunday. I leave, I get home. He won Sonoma. And then he went up to Seattle and won Seattle as well. And he was one of the, I think he was the first sportsman driver. I'm fairly certain of that. I would say I'd bet a year's paycheck on the fact that he was the first sportsman driver to ever sweep the swing, the West Coast swing like that. And I think he might have been like the second driver, maybe the third driver ever to sweep that. And after that, man, the floodgates opened and it was like he was winning races left and right.
That's three very different tracks, too. When you go from Denver way up in the air, you go from Sonoma, that's a desert, and then you go to Seattle where it's basically a rainforest.
Yep. Yep. And at the time, he only had, I am, again, fairly certain of this, I believe he was only racing one car at that point in time.
Wow.
So it certainly is going to make it more difficult. You know, once you get, all right, now he's, I would say, pretty much every race he goes to.
One car being the Camaro?
The Camaro, yeah, his dad's Camaro and Super Stock. But, yeah, initially, now, you know, he's been, you're in a double enter. If you're going to go someplace, you're going to do that type of travel, you're going to make sure you're going to get your money's worth and do a double entry. So he's been doing that for the better part of, well, probably at least 25 years, I would guess. But
sure.
Yeah, when he swept the swing, I'm fairly certain he only had the one car, and that was it. Yeah,
he's probably been doing that since 1993, 1994, which is only like 10, 12 years ago.
Right, exactly. But as he was doing that, I was down in Pittsburgh watching Timothy win stock on Saturday and Thomas win in super stock on Sunday. I told him, I actually texted him and wished him, I congratulated him on his 100th win and told him that I needed to spend some time at the Dan Fletcher School of Drag Racing. Because, obviously, he knows how to teach people to win. And
do you still have that pocket timer?
I do, though I actually, you know, I went to use it this past weekend. And, of course, I hadn't pulled it out in a while. And no big surprise, the battery was dead. And it's like, yeah, no wonder you stink, because you never practice.
Ed McLeaf was out there in Chicago as well, representing.
Ed McLeaf, yep, another guest that we've had on the show. Local guy, was the 2016 Super Comp Division One champ. Was out in Chicago. He was the Jegs All Star representative for Division One as well. So that was pretty big. It's a huge accomplishment. Being a Jegs All Star is a huge, huge accomplishment.
It takes a year to do it.
It takes a full calendar year to do it. It's really, really tough. In theory, it's potentially even tougher than being the division champ. That's an accomplishment that Ed should be, you know, really proud of. He ended up, I think he lost first round of the Jegs All-Star race. But just to qualify for the Jegs All-Star race is really, really incredible. He did it pretty incredible.
TNT Series going to beat Empire this weekend.
TNT's at Lancaster Friday, sorry, and Empire on Saturday, so they got a double race weekend coming up. I wish I could be there. Unfortunately, I got kid's birthday party this weekend, and being down in Pittsburgh this past weekend, Phil, my car owner, he's got other responsibilities as well, so we won't be able to make it to the TNT races this weekend. But yeah, they're going to be doing that, and then, you know, while we were at Pittsburgh racing, so in Super Rod, so the 990, or in this case it was 8th mile, so it was 640, on Saturday, Dale Conson won on Saturday. I lost to him second round. On Sunday, Lance Pinto, who was the prior West New York Super Rod Association champ, he won the $6,500 to win race on Sunday. So there was a lot of Western New York Super Rod, or a lot of Western New York drag racers, I will say, doing very, very well this past weekend. And while we were doing that, the Mid-Atlantic Super Gas Association was out at Numedia. And my understanding is that they had 30-odd cars in every class. So the Mid-Atlantic Super Gas Association is run by... out of the Philadelphia, let's call it the, I guess we're, since it's mid-Atlantic and the Philly area, somewhere in there, and Rob Keister runs it, and they actually run Super Comp, Super Gas, and Super Street at all of their events. So my understanding is that they had a real good turnout at their event at New Media, and I don't know about Super Street and Super Comp, but I do know that John Pelican won Super Gas. I think it was a two-day race. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I know he won Super Gas one of the 2 days. So a lot of big races going on, and the New York guys, we're gonna include Ed McLeaf in the New York guys, even though he's
proxy.
In Pennsylvania. But, yeah, the New York guys did really, really well this past weekend.
That New Media is a track you've talked a lot about. I really
love that track. I told John I wish it wasn't the same weekend as Pittsburgh, because I would have gone to New Media. It's a great track to hang out at, and we had Sal Biondo on. I mean, he's a regular. Mm-hmm. They're regulars out at New Media. It's just a great track. It's a great facility. Really fun to go race there. Again, you got the you got the amusement park Knoebels down the street, so it's nice to take the family down there and you know, go do that as well. So it's a real nice facility. I'm disappointed that I wasn't able to make that race.
The New Media track's one that we've talked about trying to get down to a bunch of different mm-hmm. times, as popular as that track is. And this was a good win for John too, because it got him back to, I don't know if it's fair to say, it got him back to what he was accustomed to, but it got him out of the dragster. It wasn't the right fit. He got back into a Corvette, and it's already starting to pay dividends for him.
It's really incredible, considering the fact that this was really the first race that he's had the car out at. You know, the car is very similar. It's a Corvette Roadster. His old Roadster, I believe, was a Spitzer chassis. This one is a Davis chassis, but a very similar style car. But to take a brand new car and go someplace and win, that's just...
Was it an all-new car, or was it just new to him?
You know, I don't know.
I'm not sure the answer.
Sure. It'd
be a good question to ask him.
Yeah, it would
if
be a
he
good
would answer
question.
His phone.
Right, right. I do know that he had to finish it, but I don't know what the... If the guy that had it before him, if he decided that he wanted to redo some things and it was a part, or if it was just one of those things where, you know, he got it as a roller, so he had to put his own motor and tranny in it. I'm not 100% sure how that car came to be, but
I thought he sold everything at one point, right? Wasn't most everything gone?
I don't know.
I can't remember. He wheels and deals so much, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, it is hard to keep up. And I do know that, you know, he obviously sold the Corvette. He sold that to Nick Akuri, who I actually met out at Pittsburgh for the first time. And it's not going to be long before Nick has that car in the winner's circle again, too. He's working out a couple of bugs with his combination, but he got down to five cars for the big race on Sunday. And Nick's a real good racer. He's been racing a while, and he's a real good racer. So it won't be long before he has that car in the winner's circle. But so I know he sold that car, and I wanted to say I thought he sold that as a roller to Nick, but I'm not 100% sure of that. He might have sold it complete. It's who knows? Like I said, John's a wheeler dealer. So, you know, if he felt like, hey, you know what, I can sell this whole thing and then pick something else up and come out on the better end, I'm sure that's what he did.
The key is to sell it when you can still get money out of it, regardless of what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, there's some guys that are really, really good at that. My, you know, probably best friend in the world, Billy Lieber. I mean, he's another guy that's a wheeler dealer, and it's amazing to me the types of deals that I don't know if you want to say he stumbles across or he negotiates for himself, but it's amazing. There are guys out there, and as long as you don't become attached to your car or your equipment, you can do that. And that's one thing about the Corvette. I wish I wasn't emotionally attached to it, because if I wasn't, somebody came along and offered me stupid money for it, I'd send it down the road and buy another race car. So, John did a fantastic job. It's amazing. It's a real testament, honestly, that he was able to win that race after basically having it out at Empire for one day testing. I talked to him. He told me that in the test passes that he made.
Doesn't that make you mad? One day testing, he goes out and wins. I'm happy for a friend, but.
I won't say it makes me mad. It makes me feel bad, because it's like, man, I really do suck. You know, here I am working with the same car I've been working with the last 5 years. And, you know, John goes out and one race and wins. So it's like, yeah, I just must be really bad. So it just makes me feel bad about myself. It doesn't make me mad. But anyways, I guess he went testing the Empire and the car was down like 20 miles an hour. And they went out to Namedia anyways. And I don't know if it was a test day or if it was the first race. And they took the tranny out, found out that the converter was junk. Iggy Boy Chesko, a longtime super gas racer out of the, I'm going to say, Philly area, loaned Johnny his transmission and torque converter, and then he put that in the car and won on Sunday. It wasn't this past weekend, wasn't all, wasn't a big picnic for John. I mean, he had some work to do as well to get the car to where it was. But, basically made, I think, one time run Sunday morning with the new combination and... Okay, let's see what happens. And at that point, was able to dial the car and drive it well and really did a great job. I'm not looking forward to having him back in the Western New York Super Auto Association, quite frankly.
You are and you're not at the same
time. That's correct, yeah. And I don't know for sure. I'm guessing that his father-in-law, Tommy Allen, was down there. I didn't see Tommy down at Pittsburgh. I would have thought that Tommy would have gone to Pittsburgh. Maybe Tommy went to... Mid-Atlantic Super Gas Association race with John, or maybe Tom stayed home, not 100% sure. Again, I didn't really look at the results of those races. I don't know if the Mid-Atlantic Super Gas Association has them online or not. Looks like the last press release I see here is maybe from Maple Grove, so I'm not sure who won the other classes from there.
For some of our motorsports coverage stuff, we've been trying to get winners in from Empire, but I can't seem to find the weekly winners dating back anything past the 30th of June.
Oh.
I'm trying.
Yeah, and I don't know if, that's just not being updated, or
I don't know if I'm looking in the right place.
No, that could be too.
I'll own that exchange that. You know, I might not be looking in the right place, but at the same time, if somebody could kindly tell me where to find winners, I'd be happy to put those in some of our local coverage out here in the Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
On the topic of Empire, they've got a couple pretty sweet races coming up. We talked about the 15th, going to be a full program, 470 Thunder and the TNT 1090s. A week from tomorrow is the first leg of the 7th Annual Gold Cup.
Right.
Which, huge weekend, some pretty big money changing hands there.
That is a big weekend for Empire, no doubt. Yeah, all the nostalgia guys basically converge upon Empire Dragway for that race, and it's gonna be a big deal. So I forget, we tried to see if we could potentially go compete. Unfortunately, the Camaro doesn't make it. Now, if I wanted to rush and get the Corvette done, I could go do it. But typically, I believe the Gold Cup race is a no electronics class.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they allow trans brakes. I'm guessing they probably still allow trans brakes, but I'm a terrible bottom bulb racer. so all I'd be doing is donating money to the pot. So I probably am not going to do that, but I will say the other thing too, that we talked about really before they were here, we haven't touched on is, they had the Street Outlaws out at Empire and I was out there then. They had a huge crowd out at Empire for that. There was the National No Prep Association, that was last week, I think. Yeah, actually it was last week, was the National No Prep Association races out at Empire. Because if we hadn't gone to Pittsburgh, that would have been another place I would have been interested in racing, as potentially trying my hand at one of the no prep races. And we had Mike O.C. on and his wife, and I guess they had a pretty good turnout out there. I know Mo ended up, for the guys that are into the no prep races, Birdman, he's one of the biggest no prep racers in the country. I think he's out of the Houston area. I know he's from Texas. But I know that he came up for that race and raced Mo in the final of the big race, the Purge. And Birdman did win the Purge over local racer Mo. But that's pretty incredible still for Mo.
Mo got deep.
Mo's got a good car. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's a nasty nitrous Mustang. The fact that he was able to, basically go to one of these big races and, take it all the way to the final, it's a testament to how good his car really is.
Another division that runs over there at Empire is that Mustang on Mustang, the Mom Series.
Yeah.
Would that car that Mo has be allowed to run there? Or
oh, yeah.
Is that,
yeah. He's run his car out there, yeah. Him and Doug Vanstrom both have run their cars out on the Friday nights that Mom's run. Yeah, I would say that Mo and Doug, my guess is, I'd be interested to know how many times Mo and Doug have run, because the way the Moms works is right. You go out and you qualify, and then the number one qualifier runs the number two qualifier. And I have to say the two baddest small tire Mustangs in the area are Mo and Doug.
Right.
I'm saying small tire. I think they're both small tire cars, but the two baddest Mustangs, I'll just say that, are Mo and Doug. And my guess is those guys have probably raced each other 100 times probably.
Dan Fletcher has raced in the finals 90 different drivers in events that he's won, and those two have raced each other 200 times.
That's right. that's probably pretty accurate. Yeah, that's probably pretty accurate. It was, like I said, my understanding is they had a good race out there, too. And then, let's see. So this weekend, I think they're racing the 470 guys out.
470 Thunder's going to be there, in addition to TNT on the Saturday night, Yes, on Saturday the 15th. I was getting ahead of myself. Look back to Gold Cup weekend. And that's all on Saturday night.
Well, I think the track just announced that they were going to run the 470 guys on the Gold Cup weekend, too.
That's on there.
Oh, that's it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's been on there. I don't remember that being changed. I thought that had been there all along. But it could be.
Yeah, I would
guess. There's so many colors on this thing. It's a beautiful schedule.
It is a rainbow of colors, yes, there's no doubt.
Let's walk through the Gold Cup weekend itself. Friday it starts off. That's the first round for the 7th Annual Gold Cup. On Saturday the 22nd, the Gold Cup continues with the 470 Thunder. And then Saturday night's the pit party. That's the live music, the band, all that other stuff that happens.
Yep.
And then Sunday is the AA Gassers and the Stalzer Pro Stocks are going to be there. Actually, all 3 days of that weekend, those cars are going to be in action. And each Saturday and Sunday are going to be independent races of each other. So Saturday and Sunday, Saturday full program, Sunday comeback is another full program. It's not like it bleeds over.
Right.
So it's a couple opportunities to bring down home some Empire Dragway hardware.
Yep.
Between Saturday the 22nd and Sunday the 23rd.
They have special trophies for those races too, and they're pretty nice trophies that they have. Yeah. That's one thing I will say that I talked to, I think it was Billy Lieber that told me this, that you go and you win a big race someplace and you win $20,000, let's say.
Right.
20 years from now, that $20,000 is gone.
Sure.
But you still have the trophy sitting there.
What's the protocol for something like that? Some of the big dirt races, some of the big asphalt races, even some of the big demolition derbies that I've been to, they give away the big things. I'm giving away a 6-foot trophy. I'm giving away an 8-foot trophy. Mm-hmm. The hell do you do with it? 8-foot trophy. What do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know. But are they decent small cups, stuff that you can do stuff with? You know, something that you can dust reasonably without having a dedicated day.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the, you know, probably the most obnoxious, I guess we'll call it, trophy is the NHRA World Champion Trophy.
Yeah.
For a division win, there's a small Wally. Then for a national event win, you get a big Wally, which is probably, I'm going to say, 18 inches tall on the pedestal. I mean, that's still a decent size. And then you get the World Champion Trophy, and they basically take that and they, blow it up even bigger. And I would say, that's probably 2 feet tall. Mm-hmm. It's got a big old base on it. And, so that, like I said, that's the most obnoxious, but even that is not the 6-foot trophy that you see people have. And, that's one thing I will say is that I think people in general, the different event organizers have realized that people don't necessarily want taller. They want something that's more unique and something that they can display.
Something that we've come across in our travels, regardless of the walk of motorsports, drivers are more excited. This is, and I don't get it, because weight in racing doesn't help anything. Drivers seem to get more excited over a small, heavy trophy than a 6-foot trophy they can pick up with one hand.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a mental thing, I guess. I don't know. If it's heavier, it means it's full of more lead and it's worth more, I don't know.
Yeah, the GRS, we talked to them. I mean, they have every one of their trophies is the handmade trophies.
Yeah.
I think they have the die cast on top of them, right?
Yep.
And there was another one that I just saw recently. Who the heck had this trophy? Boy, I should think about this, but somebody had a trophy that I saw, and it was really, really cool. It was one of the local tracks that handed it out. It's like, that's a really nice trophy.
Was that one of those spare parts trophies?
It might have been. Yeah, it might have been.
There's a couple different businesses in the upper Midwest, Iowa, Minnesota, and then there's one in New York, Buell Built Trophies, and then the company out in Minnesota, Terry Evans with Badass Trophies. They take blown motors, and they weld cups and chalices and trophies out of the leftover pieces, and every one of them is unique. Yeah. Buell Built Trophies here does some cool stuff. He's made some really, really tall ones that if it ever fell over, it would kill
somebody. Get
if
hurt.
It fell on your dog, your dog's done. But those have always been cool to see. I like those. Those typically were in the early stages. Those were reserved for like most aggressive drivers and things like that.
Yeah.
But now it's the whole event is just this table scattered with welded together leftover parts, and they got a couple sign painters that have gotten involved. They'll basically rattle can the whole thing and then pinstripe them. It's really cool, and your overhead in that is way less than anything trying to go through one of these trophy houses. And get a 25 plastic trophies that range in size from 18 to 36 inches tall. You're going to spend a lot of money doing that.
That's assuming that you have what I would consider an artist that is talented enough to put something like that together for you, right? Because I would love to be able to give away something like that to Western New York Super Rod Association winners, but I don't have the capability of making something like that that somebody would want, would someone want to display. So what we've done is, we have Dan Delaney who designs our plaques, and I have nice laser engraved plaques that I give away.
Can't go wrong there.
What was that?
Can't go wrong there.
Dan does a great job, and they're really, really nice plaques. But I would love to give away essentially a custom sculpture, right? That's what these trophies are. But again, you need to have somebody that's talented enough to do it, and that's not me. And nobody, if anybody's watching that wants to, that's an artist that wants to make me custom trophies that I can give away to my drivers, I'm more than willing to do so. I haven't found that person yet. So
you get them cleaned up and let Dan pinstripe them.
See, now that honestly, that would be cool. And I will say, the cartoon plaque that we give away to our series champ at the end of the year is super, super cool.
Right.
And that's where he takes essentially a picture of the champion's car and then makes it into a cartoon and puts a big number one and gold leaf on it. And they're really nice. And I will say that Harry Phelps, our champion last year, actually hasn't received his yet. I gave Harry his money, but we were supposed to have two races back on Memorial Day, which we then canceled because of the weather and schedule and stuff like that. So hopefully the weather holds out for us for July 29th and 30th. And then at that point in time, I'll be able to present Harry with his plaque from 2017. And I'm sure he'll like it. It's cool.
Awesome. My boy Alan has suddenly taken a liking to watching Food Network and all the cooking shows and stuff. And I thought of Dan the other night when we were watching one of these cooking competitions. I think it was called Chopped. They had to incorporate gold leaf into one of the meals prepared for the judges. And I thought of Dan. It's like, Dan could probably win this.
You can make it look good. I don't know how good it would taste, but you can make it look good at least.
Why not? Man. 8 o'clock. I've messaged every means possible of getting a hold of John, and I've not heard back from him an hour or a couple of minutes over. So maybe we'll table it. We'll get back with him. Let's go catch up with Frank for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say 2 weeks from now, if we're back here, it'll be right before our next set of races. And at that point, we could possibly talk to John and give him hell for blowing us off.
We'll figure it out. We'll look at the schedule and make a plan for it. But I think that is going to do it for this one. We appreciate everybody coming and hanging out with us for a little while here on episode number 18 of the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast. That's going to do it for this one from the North Park Building here at Academy Square on Cayuga Street, the home of Finger Lakes One. We'll see everybody in a couple weeks.
This has been the Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. We'll see you right back here again in 2 weeks. Thanks for watching.